did you see that? Did you see that piece in this morning's Times? I'm telling you, we're making fools of ourselves almost on the hour, every hour, 24 hours a day. I'm talking about the pudding ship, as they call it. Remember all that hoopla recently, sending all the food in the Biaver? So they wind up with canned truffles, mushroom soup, a la sherry, and... Oh, man. Did you see that? What a funny piece. Sad piece. I'll tell you, it's getting out of my hand. You can't tell me, they're going to be golf gallop. It's like Don Quixote. Remember, yeah, the story about Don Quixote? Everybody goes to see Man of La Mancha. They think it's great. See, they all sit there and applaud, and they sing, The Impossible Dream. And they say, that's what it's all about. And they did not get Cervantes' message. Hardly anybody gets Cervantes' message out of Don Quixote. They think he's a, you know, a great character. Actually, he's one of the saddest of all. You know that scene where he goes galloping off after the windmills? Reminds you a lot of people you know, doesn't it, huh? Sure does. Yeah, I'll tell you, friends. Bump, ba-dum, bump. Would you please hit the money button?
Your Town's New York, head office of American business.
Head office, man.
Where more than 22 million people get off and on planes every year. And a lot of them take off for our big town, Montreal. Biggest city in the world's second biggest country, Canada. Montreal and New York. We fly to both. Air Canada, Canada's international airline. The Western world's biggest airline outside of the United States. Fly up to Montreal with us. We fly from your town to our town from early in the morning until late at night. 9 flights a day, every day. And every day on every flight, thrifty family fares. For reservations, phone your travel agent or Air Canada. When your business is big enough for Montreal, fly the big one to Montreal.
Yeah.
Air Canada.
Oh, listen to that jet. Listen to that hornet call for that baby. Ooh. Air Canada. Hey, you know, speaking of flying, I just flew down from Buffalo. I went up to outside of Buffalo and did a show at St. Bonaventure. It's a little school there nestled in the hills of northern New York. Oh, boy, oh, boy. It's near Bradford, Pennsylvania, not 15 seconds from Canada. It's really up there, see, in the plane. I was on this plane. We go turboprop, and we go flopping down into Buffalo, and the snow, you could just see it swirling down there. And I would have to say that Buffalo must be one of the grimmest cities from the air in the wintertime of any city that I've flown into recently. Why? Because as far as you see nothing but this blank white snow and these dead trees peeking up. It looks like you're landing in what you would ordinarily think of as Nome. And, we sit down here in New York, and we complain about a little snow, you know, and it gets down to 40, and people say, oh, what a cold day, oh, my car's so cold, gotta go to Miami, oh. And, they walk around, kvetch and all that about the weather. And up there in northern New York, the instant I got off the plane, I knew I was in the home office of winter. I mean, it's winter there. I mean, really winter. Everything is gray and lead. And the snow comes down there from about November, and it stays on the ground until May. It just does not leave. And so we drove out of, this morning, I drove out of St. Bonaventure towards Bradford, PA, which is where that airport is. Where I was coming back in a different airport, driving through the countryside, the hills rolling off into all directions. And we got out at the airport. And, you know, the scene at the airport was really like an Arctic scene. Have you ever seen pictures of Arctic operations in an airport? Well, you couldn't see the runways at all, just snow, great banks of snow, and it was this yellow snow plow. Have you ever seen one of these really high-speed snow plows with the tremendous whirling blades? This guy's driving up down that runway about every 30 seconds, going maybe 50 miles an hour. You can't even see the plow. You just see this great splume of snow rising higher and higher, just like a great geyser of snow. Just, wah, he's driving like mad, and he's keeping the runway plowed. He just keeps driving back and forth. And I'm as a pilot, I was fascinated, you see, because this is really, this is nitty-gritty flying. It's dark and gray, and the snow is coming down. It was coming down harder and harder. You know, they had the biggest snowfall, in case you're not hip to it, in the history of the Weather Bureau outside of Boston. And, man, they've had a lot of snow up there in the years. 44 inches in this one Weather Bureau station. 44 inches. Think about that. That is snow, man. And if any old codger calls up from Baltimore or New Hampshire or someplace like Portland, Maine, says, yeah, no, they don't have winter like they used to have. Get out. 44 inches, man. They don't have winter like they used to have. There's always some old clown walking around saying that, saying all the while, you know, everything is frozen for miles around and the ice flows are coming, floating up the Miami River. They don't have winters like you used to have. But nevertheless, 44 inches, Dad. And so I'm waiting up there in this little airport in Bradford, PA. It's a very basic airport. I mean, it's not like Kennedy or LaGuardia. There aren't 522 lounges and barbershops, anything like that. They got a little counter in there with about seven stools where you go in and drink coffee. That's it, see? And there's a nice lady with gray hair that keeps making more coffee. And there's guys who are working on the field. That's it. Nobody else. And a couple of passengers go in and out. And it's a little building there, brick building. And the snow, as far as the eye can see. So I had about an hour to kill. I was all by myself. Nobody else in the airport. And so I walked out of the building. The wind, it's coming down into the frozen north. And I looked into the FSS there. They have a little federal flight service thing there. And I asked him about the weather. And he said the wind is from the northeast. And, man, that's Canada up there. When the wind is from the northeast up there, that's coming from the home office of winter, the Arctic Circle. And it's blowing steady, you see. And it was kind of a crosswind across the runway, which looked to me like an east-west runway, and you could see that big runway wind indicator, weather vane. She was flopping around back and forth out there, and they had all these little orange flags. It really did look like a scene right out of a Navy movie of Arctic or Antarctic operations, because they had outlined the runway with little orange glow flags, you see, all along. You see these flags flopping. Boy, they're standing out straight. That white stuff was coming down, and the skies were absolutely impenetrable, just lead, you see, just solid lead. And it was a nice cold, though. It was kind of pleasant. You know, once in a while, as an old Midwesterner, I enjoy that plunge back into real winter. You know, this is the real thing. So I go walking out of the building, and around the side, they have another little hangar there where all the general aircraft is. You know, the small planes, which you would call the general aircraft planes, were a few Cessnas and Pipers and that. So I walked around. There was not a soul there, absolutely not a soul. And the hangar was completely deserted. And I love to go into deserted hangars and take a look at what they've got in there. And here were about five or six airplanes. Among them was an old World War II trainer. And it had been totally modified for stunt flying. You see, it had the big thing on the side, license for aerobatics, and there's some guy up there who does aerobatics, and here were these planes sitting there quietly in that absolutely ice-cold hangar, maybe five or six of them, a dirt floor, and the wind is banging over the corrugated roof of this hangar, and I'm walking around looking at there was a Beechcraft there, a Bonanza. The wind is howling, and I see out through the window of the hangar, they're tied out on the line. There are two planes tied out there in that snow. The snow drifted up all around them. There was a little tri-pacer, it looked like, and a little green and white tri-pacer sitting there all blocked in with the snow. And I walked around the hangar, and absolutely nothing. I'm totally deserted. I believe there was also a Stinson there tied down, the wind blowing, and I could see the ailerons on this plane had been tied down. I could see the wings just vibrating in that wind. And I could hear the sound whistling past the elevators, making a whistling sound. And then the snowplow went screaming by again. And there was nothing going on, so I drifted back into the main terminal, little building there. I got another cup of coffee. And then out of the frozen sky came this turboprop, this twin-engine turboprop. And he went down the field with his downwind leg. I could see him going downwind, and he made a big turn into base, and he's coming down on his final. I could see his flaps coming down. And boy, it was a dramatic sight. I don't know whether you find flying as dramatic as I do, but it was a dramatic scene seeing that guy coming in over the hills with his flaps down and bucking that crosswind and that snow drifting down. And perfect landing. See, he touched down on that runway. And his props, of course, the turboprop, kicked up the snow. And the minute he hit, you could see the snow fly, fantastic big splume of snow. And he just came rolling his rollout, you see, beautifully. He's running down that center line of the runway. And on either side of him, you could see that great wash of snow swirling up into the skies. It was like out of a picture of Admiral Byrd. And goodbye. He throws it in the... He puts the brakes on, and he comes swirling up. He comes roaring up to the little terminal there, and two people get out. The door immediately comes down. Two people get out, and the wind blows, and their coats are flapping. And nobody gets out of the plane. The pilots, the stewardesses, you see the plane is just sitting out there in the snow all by itself. And the guy behind the desk says, well, you can get on anytime you want. So I walked out across. Oh, yes, this is very basic flying. So I walked out across the brief interval there, and the wind is howling around the building, and the snow is flying, and I go up the stairs, and I see the pilots in there throwing switches, and they're going over their checklist again. They're about to take off, see? And so I get into the plane, and there was just about three people in the plane, maybe myself and two or three others. There's not much action in the midweek coming down from Bradford, PA, and I get into this plane, and then we go back to the end of the runway, and I see little flags next to me all flapping. The wind and the snow blowing, and he sits at the end of the runway just about maybe a tenth of a second, because he poured the coal to her, and we started to roll. I could see that snow then. She was kicking up that wash again on both sides of us, a great plume of snow, and then we're up. He rotated her, and up we go. And I could see down below, as the ground drops away almost instantly, you see, you begin to lose the ground because the ceiling is pretty low and in a driving snowstorm. And just like that, we're up. And I could see undulating off over in the distance the black, white, and sort of dark hills that are in northern New York. And once in a while, you could see a black river, the Allegheny River, a black river snaking its way through this country up. It's a very dramatic country. And we went sailing off and heading towards Wilkes-Barre, which was the next stop. And we flew low. You see, he flew at about 4,000 or 5,000 feet. And it's just a short hop to Wilkes-Barre. By the way, I'd flown myself into that airport a couple of times. And I knew the airport. And so sure enough, he's leveling in on Wilkes-Barre, and I could see. I knew exactly what he was doing, the approach, and I could see the snow going past us down there. And it was just a great flight. I really dug it. And the stewardess kept coming back and giving us hot chocolate. And somehow that's right out of the Bobbsey twins, you know, a cup of hot chocolate. Speaking of the Bobbsey twins, this is WOR, friends, in good old New York. Yeah. Yeah, Miller, man. If you're a little bit out of the hot chocolate range, friends, and you want to lay in something real, bring it up there big. Miller High Life. Yeah. Miller High Life.
Hearty, robust, deep down good. Brew like others wish they could.
You like that little story, huh? One all listen, friends. And that's it. Just let that yelling crowd there calm down a little bit there. I want to tell you, Daddy-O, if you're going to lay it in this weekend, I'd like to suggest a great big fat old vibrating six-pack of Miller High Life beer, just pulsating with passion, man. This is the passionate beer. I mean, all those others, you know, they got bubble and foam and they taste kind of bitter, but Miller High Life, you know, the word High Life is meant really that way, you know. Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer. You can get it in cans and bottles. You can get it in troughfuls, man. Miller High Life, yeah. Miller High Life, the Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Man, they have winters up there, too. Now, Let's see. We got a couple of other whoopies. Let's get them on. How about that seaboard thing? You got that ready in there,
all
Herbert?
All aboard!
All aboard for Miami, the upbeat city filled with places to go, things to do, memories to share. For your vacation trip to Miami this season, make the going as great as being there. Take the Florida Special, the fun train to Florida. Besides the roomy accommodations for both Pullman and coach passengers, the Florida Special features a candlelight dinner served with champagne, fashion show, folk sing-along, television, movies, and an onboard hostess. It's such an easy and relaxing way to travel, you'll almost hate to get off. Remember, this year, the train is in and easy to take. Call Seaboard Coastline Railroad or your travel agent today.
In this area, friends, write to Seaboard Coastline, 12 West 51st Street, New York, 10020, or call 245-7380, area code 212. Bum, bum, bum. You know, speaking of the Seaboard Coastline, do you know that I have I'm not going to say what you think I'm going to say. No, I have an emotional response to that Seaboard Coastline. And I don't know whether I should tell you or not. Oh, it's good. It's not anti the railroad. It's not at all. It's a very peculiar... All right, I will tell you. It's an Army story. You want to hear a sad Army story? Immediately following a couple of these little whoopies here. One of the whoopies we got here, you dad, if you've got the hunger, man, for a color TV set. I mean, you know, no accounting for taste, but if you happen to have that, you've got to have that little pink old David Brinkley come around your house every day in a little old dark green... Chet Huntley and all that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people like that kind of stuff. Now, if you've had the thing going for a color TV set, here is your chance now to get a Magnavox color television set in their fantastic once-a-year factory-authorized sale. This is no hanky-panky, you know, with some guy selling hot TV sets from trucks that he picked up on along the Jersey Turnpike. This is the real thing, Dad. Yes, sir. Magnavox, and you can save up to 60 bananas, big Iron Men. And right now only, you know, this is a fantastic Magnavox set, you know, it tunes everything and it whistles Dixie and it does it all, boy. Magnavox color TV and fine-tunes your set automatically. You know, I wonder how guys that are nearsighted tune their TV sets, you know. Do they permanently tune them nearsighted, you know? But this is a Magnavox, and you can pick up one of these jazzy Magnavox color TVs at the lowest price in their history. $299.90. That's 10 cents less than $300. And this is the time to do it. During the annual factory authorized sale. So you look for your nearest Magnavox dealer in the yellow pages. Little guy, he hangs around in there. You just open that up and shake it, and he'll fall out. He's in your yellow book. Magnavox dealer. You look for him in there, huh? He'll save you a bundle. That's what the copy says, a bundle. Yeah, bindle stiffs everywhere you look. Bundle. Now, we have one other here. Let's see. We've got the Millie Rosetta. Oh, Rosetta! Yeah! Oh, you want to see the number of smudgy cards and letters we are getting from the faithful out there. Numbers of smudgy little letters, thumb-printed and tear-stained and all that. Hey, by the way, have you noticed these commercials recently? Have you noticed the rise of violence in our world has been... finally, at long last, recognized in these friendly little fun household commercials. If you notice that Arthur Godfrey comes on, and he says, you know, friends, I want to tell you about this wonderful pre-wash rinse. Now, here, you take, for example, this shirt with this big old blood stain on it. Now, you just, holy smokes, what's going on in those commercials? And he brings up the shirt, and it looks like the guy's been plugged right through the heart. Yeah, big blood stain right there. Now, I'm telling you, have you seen those? There's about five of them. They keep talking about blood stains. Of course, if you've got a little neighborhood, one of your relatives works for the mafia, he's liable to have a lot of laundry of that type around, you know, so you don't know, you know. But I've been watching this. Remember when they used to say simply a stain? They used to say difficult stains, that kind of stuff, or problem stains. Now they come right out. They say, now here, even blood stains. And you see this great big blob of blood. Now, if you've got a color TV set, friends, you'll see all the real stuff on TV. Bump, ba-dum, bump. Come on, is that a sick comment? It is not. I say the commercials are. Because I have pointed it out does not mean I am sick, friends. It's only the sick people who don't recognize it. That's what bothers me. Rum-pa-dum-pum. Yeah, let's see, Magnavox. Oh, yes, Rosetta. My Rosetta. And I'd like to report that we've been getting all these smudgy little cards and letters from people out there who are sending for this special hip catalog, man, only sent to Shepherd listeners only. So if you're a John Gambling listener, you're trying to pass by sneaking in here at night, we can tell right away by your little round handwriting, you know, that nice little girl handwriting. Anybody who dots his I's with little circles does not get one of these catalogs. Or even more sick-making than that, I have occasionally received letters from people who dotted their I's with little tiny hearts. Have you ever seen that? Oh, yes, it's terrible. Terrible. It took 20 minutes to recover from that one. I had to take two Alka-Seltzers after that. But nevertheless, friends, if you're one of the real ones out there and you'd like this fantastic special hip catalog for Shepherd listeners only, they got black light equipment. Think what you can do with that. Psychedelic, yeah, Gaslight. Do you remember the movie Gaslight? Well, you remember what Charles Boyer, how he drove Ingrid Bergman right out of her bird? Remember that? Right? You remember that? It's a great movie, see? Well, it was kind of corny, but it's terrific, you know. And great idea. Friends, just think what you could do to the rest of your family. You sneak around, see, and you wire the house with black light. And so, you know, the old man comes into the John, he flips on the switch, and it's black light, and his face is green, purple, and it's looking out at him from this mirror. Ah! And you cackle. And they got psychedelic lighting, and the strobes and all that, and wild black light posters. These are really wild. I mean, they're terrible. I mean, just awful. And for this special catalog, you've got to be a qualified art lover. You've got to be a responsible, reliable, sober, industrious citizen of this republic. And also, you must be able to prove that you listen to this turkey every night, see? So the way you get this fantastic Rosetta special catalog is just send your name and address to Turkey, W-O-R. Okay? And we'll know you're one of us. Rosetta, they have everything. They're at 79 Chamber Street, 75 West 45th Street, and 73 Murray Street. You send for that catalog, okay? Get on a stick. Now, you have one more in there? Hit the button, please.
Now you can go, go, go to Citgo and win up to $2,500 playing Be a Winner. Pick up a game card and rub off three flower petals on the card. If the word go appears three times, you win the value of the card. $1, $5, $25, or $100. And because every card has at least three goes on it, every card can be a winner. The luckier you are at guessing where the goes are, the more you can win. Best of all, you find out if you're a winner on the spot. And if your luck's really running high, you can also win the big prize of $2,500. Just save each game card you get until you spell out the words, a nice place to visit. If you're a licensed driver, you can play Be a Winner. For details and a game card, drive into your participating Citgo dealers now. It's a nice place to visit and win up to $2,500. Remember, this is the game where every card can be a winner. Nothing to buy, void where prohibited.
Listen, I had a glove compartment. I used to have this car, which I finally got rid of. It just got insane because I had a glove compartment that was stuffed so full of little round medals and animals' heads. And, Oh, boy, every time I went in, I got this stuff. You know, and my glove compartment was so stuffed full of this stuff that finally I just had to get rid of the car. You know, it was just easier than trying to empty that glove compartment. I was kind of afraid of it anyway. But nevertheless, now, I have to tell you this story now. All set now, friends? Settle back. Before we do that, I got a couple of things I have to do here. I don't know whether you heard this. One of my favorite humor papers, people keep writing me, and they say, well, what do you read, you know, with the... What do you find really jazzy, really funny? See, well, one of my favorite humor papers is the Philadelphia Evening Bulletin. I mean, it's very... The best humor, of course, is unconscious. And what makes it so great is they're serious, you know? And so I keep reading this paper and falling off my chair and knocking over the ferns and all that in my office, you know, and the aphids yell and holler. But nevertheless, from the Philadelphia Evening Bulletin, an item from the February 12th issue, which I picked up here, And it's from the Bulletin Harrisburg Bureau. Now, Harrisburg's an official. That's the state of Pennsylvania's capital there. Harrisburg. There's more than the butcher's thumb behind short weights. The Bureau of Standard Weights and Measures in Harrisburg, in Pennsylvania, reported yesterday. In a listing of, quote, interesting cases, the Bureau found poor eyesight by a scale operator to be responsible for most of the short weight packages of meat in supermarkets. So if you go to the supermarket, you know, you see this guy with his big, thick cheaters on, you know, he's got glasses that look like the bottom of Coke bottles. Well, you better be careful, you know, this guy's probably... But nevertheless, the most interesting case of all, it was reported by the Bureau of Weights and Measures. Listen carefully now. Get the potatoes out of your ears. You're going to like this one. The most interesting case involved, and we quote the official report, a buxom young lady who consistently processed short weight packages due to the fact that she was weighing part of her anatomy each time she stepped close to the scales. Lee missed that one completely. That's too bad. No, you didn't hear it. Come on. The Bureau said, and we quote, her ingenious manager, who discovered the reason for the short weights, installed a metal guard in front of the scale, effectively preventing a recurrence of this mishap. Wonder how much they weighed. Did you hear that? This chick get up there and weighed a salami. I mean, why does that appeal to me? That's a real rotten news item. But that's the truth. That was listed, an official release by the Bureau of Standard Weights and Measures. And this young lady, I bet she's a great date. Now, we have another one here. It's wild. But, all right, I'll tell you the story now. I might as well come out. You know, I've been beating around the bush here trying to get out of it. But I'll tell you the story about my little hang-up on the seaboard people, you know, the seaboard railroad there. Have you ever seen their trains? You ever seen the one that goes down to Miami? Well, let me tell you a little story about that. This goes back to when I'm in the Army, see? I'm in the Army. And the Army does kind of funny things to you, you know. You begin to live in a sort of a private world. I mean, this is the real Army, you know. You're in a private world of the Army. It's it. And the outside world is kind of an alien thing. In fact, you don't even think much about it. It's out there. That's it. That's just the other world. And in the Army, we're all together. So I'm in this camp, and it's in Missouri, in the foothills of the Ozark. And it's bad news. I want to tell you bad news. And, of course, you know, you just sort of accept after a while. You get used to it. I'm going through all the obstacle courses, and I'm doing all this stuff. But the camp, I'm telling you, the camp was, if you'll excuse the expression, hell on wheels. It was a bad news camp. And it would alternately rain. I mean, really rain. And then it would snow. Oh, boy, would it snow. But it never was in between. It was either raining or snowing. If it wasn't doing, well, I would say, there was one point when it would do neither one of those. That's when it would drop to 30 below zero. And so it was up and down, back and forth. And I am, you know, I'm doing this kind of work where all the time I am out in the pole line yard, and we're climbing up and down telephone poles. Have you ever climbed a 35-foot pole, friends, at, say, the temperature running about 15 degrees and the sleet coming down out of the Ozark Hills? You'll learn a little about reality with your climbers on. And I'm carrying that cross piece up there, and the wind is screaming, and down below me is this sergeant hollering, and we're trying to get the wire up and break the record of Company L's or some crazy thing like that. It was just one long... it was like having a gigantic toothache 24 hours a day being there. And we'd come back into the mess hall, and we'd sit glumly. And the word was out, of course, all the time, that we were going to get shipped. None of us knew where we were going to go, but we were going to get shipped. And I'm in this little band of malcontents. This little company was Company K. We are about to embark on our great career. We're about to embark. And so day after day after day this went, day after day after day. And it just seemed to go on endlessly. And if we weren't crawling through concrete culverts on our behind, dragging our rifle, And with the wind coming down our neck and through the mud and the slush, we were pretending like we were out on the range. We were dry firing our gun, or our piece, if you prefer that. There's always some guy's going to write, saying, hey, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, 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 blah. Fan don't know. I carried one for 3 years. I got a groove in my back to show it. I know what the words are. So it went on and on and on. This can go, you know, just got to be one long, kind of a farrago, one long dance. And every morning they would, the rain is beating down on the barracks, and it's 4:35 in the morning, and you could hear the wind pouring down, and the whistles would blow, and you'd wake up, and you could still taste last night's chow, salt pork and beans. Believe it or not, I was actually in an outfit where they really served beans. You know, everybody talks about Army. Yeah, they really did. And you wake up in the morning, and the rain is pouring down, and it's dripping through the barracks, and you could smell your fatigues, which have not been to the laundry for 4 weeks, and they're gamey, and you wake up, and it's yellow light bulb hanging over your head, and this corporal from Tennessee is running around. Hey, come on, let's go, you guys. Drop them socks, and let's get moving. Let's go. And he's running back and forth, and go running like mad. And so you get up. And the first couple of weeks, you know, you do these things fast when they holler. But now you're kind of moving in slow motion. You swing your legs down. It's cold, and the wind is blowing along the barracks floor. And you put on your leggings, and you know the whole bit. And everything's kind of damp and wet and clammy. And then you have PA systems.
Oh, the uniform of the day will be Class D fatigues, helmet liner. You will also wear your gas mask. You must wear your cartridge belt today. You will wear your leggings. And please, you will wear your...
The guy's checking the list.
You will now wear your medical kit and bayonet. The uniform will also include field jacket and GI raincoat. There will be a formation in just 5 minutes on the company straight.
Rain is coming down. You put your crummy field jacket on and your raincoat and your bayonet and your gas mask. And then the next thing you know, you're out on the street. And the rain is banging down on your helmet. And you know, this is a very, very distinctive sound. You can't really hear much when that rain is coming down on a tin hat. You know, the rain is pouring down, dripping right down your back of your neck, and it's ice cold. Well, this went on and on. And then the word is out. After about, it seemed like a year of this, all of a sudden it is announced that we are about to ship, that we are redlined, and we are going to leave on Friday. And boy, the excitement getting out of this any place. We didn't care where they, if they sent us to hell, we didn't care. Just get out of this place. We had it, you know, up to here. And everybody's running around all excited, and they're getting their equipment all checked and all that stuff. What do you think happened? The day before we were to ship, I woke up, and I was so sick, I couldn't believe it. Was I sick? I woke up, I don't know what it was. I'll tell you, I was so sick, I was shaking. I mean, just shaking, and was sweating. And it was the first time I'd sweat. You know, you don't sweat. It was always cold there. And I'm sweating, and the sweat is pouring off of me, and I've got a headache, and I feel rotten. And I wake up in the morning, and I'm scared. I'm sick. I'm really sick. And I could feel the chills, and alternately there were chills, and then I'd feel real hot. Then I'd feel chills. And so I get up in the morning and fall out the company street in the rain. And the first sergeant is walking around back and forth in front of the company, and he is barking out orders about our about to happen shipment. And he's saying, well, men's, we're going to ship now. All you guys know that from now on we're under tight security. We are now alerted for shipment. We will have no letters home about this shipment. You will not guess. You will not even give any rumors out as to where we are going to go, because I don't even know and the CO don't know. We do not know where we are about to go. The orders has already arrived at battalion headquarters and they is sealed. As you guys know, we are a high security radar outfit. And all these things must be kept to you. You keep them lips buttoned. You see all them posters in the latrine about button your lip and sink a ship? Well, that means us, right? We will have no talk. Now, any of you men's that need any special medical training or any special medical treatments or anything like that,
You will report down to the day room before we ship, and we will see if we can get any of your shots or anything like that completed before we get on the way. Now, any questions? And I am shaking. Oh, I'm so sick. I can hardly stand up. This is one of those few times in my life that I've been sick, so sick that I was swaying. And the whole ground around me was tilting. And I couldn't even hear what he was saying. I could just hear a ringing in my ears. And my head hurt. And up above my eyes, I could feel this terrible pain just rocking through my head. And at the same time, my throat, it was so sore. And I could hardly open my... Any of you doctors out there, I don't know what you're recognizing, but I never found out what it was. That my throat was so sore, I could hardly talk, even to myself. And sick, my stomach, I could feel sick to my stomach, but most of all, I felt chills. Tremendous chills. And then the chill would last for about a minute, and I'd shake like mad. And then there would be enormous heat, and I would sweat. Well, through that whole day, we were out climbing the poles or doing some crazy thing. I don't recall exactly what it was, but I just remember that whole day went by as a fantastic nightmare. And the one thing over and over, I get something to myself. Oh, don't let them find out. If they find out, you're sunk. The company's going to ship, and you're going to be stuck here. And God knows where you'll be sent. Oh, who knows, they may even keep you here in this hole. The whole thing, I was afraid, you see, that if I went down to the dispensary, down to the clinic, you know, guys were always goofing off and inventing sicknesses, and here I was really sick, see? And the one thing I was afraid of doing was going down to the clinic and telling them I'm sick, because I knew, man, I was so sick, I knew what would happen. I would go to the hospital right now, and the company was going. And I was scared, really scared. And everything kept swirling. I couldn't even see. I remember trying to climb a pole. And the pole kept swaying. Can you imagine being up on the top of a 30-foot telephone pole and being so dizzy that I couldn't see? And the ground kept tilting on me. The wind was blowing. Well, finally, the day was over. We have chow. I don't even go to chow. And I sit on the edge of my bunk. I remember looking over at Gasser, and I says, Gasser, I'm really sick, man. And he says, you better go down to the clinic, man. You don't know what you got. You may have spinal meningitis or something terrible. You know, they had it around there. A lot of guys were getting it. I says, oh, I don't know. I can't do anything. If I go down there, man, I'm sunk. And I kept throwing up. I kept running down to the latrine, yeah, and I was afraid people would see me. Well, the night goes by, and I couldn't sleep. And I was just tossing and turning and sweating and sick. And I'd get up every 5 minutes and run down to the latrine. And, boy, it was unbelievable. And it was getting worse. I was the only time in my life I saw spots before my eyes. Really? Have you ever really seen spots? I did. Real spots. Well, it finally was dawn. This is the day we're to ship. It is dawn. And it's gray. And we are lined up in the company street. All of our equipment, our full field pack. Barracks bags, raincoats, helmet liner, everything. M1 now. We've been issued the M1s. We're ready, man. And the rain is coming down. And the first sergeant is calling the roll. And the captain's all dressed up. And the second lieutenant, and the two second Louis, and a couple of staff sergeants. You know, they're all in there traveling. They're class A's. And there's a train pulled up. We could see it down at the end, way down by the 2nd Army headquarters down there. And sure enough, 10 minutes later, we are marched down and we are standing by the train. You've ever seen pictures of them getting on the train? That's the way it is, you know. We're all standing by this train and waiting. And they're checking off our names. Each guy gets up into the train and he checks off. And I can't even walk. It's fantastic. And I said to Gans, I said, Gans, you better hold me up, man. I'm going to go. I'm going to pass right out. And I was really sick. Well, we faked it. And I got on the train. And the train started to roll. We were out of the siding maybe a half an hour. And I know we're gone from the camp. They can't do anything. And I can let myself get sick. And I just sort of let it go. I'm just sick. And the first sergeant comes back and says, what's the matter with you? I said, I'm sick. He said, why didn't you tell me? You mean to tell me you're going to get sick on a train? Oh, no, no.
I said, yeah, I'm sick. He said, oh. And then he said the only thing he ever said that was good to me, he said, I don't blame you. He said, I wouldn't have gone and stayed in that hole ever myself. He said, come on, come on. He grabs a hold of my neck and he drags me down to the end of the car. And every troop train has a doctor on it. Did you know that? That's right, medical officer. And this guy took one look at me. And he says, make up his bunk. And they put me in one of these bunks, and I lay in this bunk. Well, you know, we made that trip. We were 63 hours on the rail. And I just remember vaguely waking up. Vaguely. I'd wake up and I'd go swooning back. I was out of my head all the time, completely. My throat, my sweat, and I'd wake up. And they'd bring me some stuff once in a while. One of the guys would bring me a mess kit. I'd say, oh, take it away. Oh, wow. I was so sick. And it just went on and on. It was like a one long nightmare. And I'd hear rattling and banging and crashing. And I'd hear the guys talking. And once in a while, I'd hear the sound of somebody hollering. And I'd hear a card game going on. And I'd sleep again and wake up. And my entire bunk was just bathed in sweat. Which is thick with sweat. It was the worst journey I ever made in my life. And I kept coming out of this delirium. I was delirious for a while. I remember that. And I would look out. And then I began to notice things around me. I was getting better. I didn't know it, but I was so sick. And I noticed right above me, there is a plaque, like, right above me. I kept looking at it and reading it and looking at it and reading it. And what do you think it said? Seaboard Railway. That's right. It was a train. Now, that wasn't their train. It was apparently a car they got from them. It said Seaboard Railroad, or Railway, whatever the name is, but it's Seaboard, stuck in my mind. And I kept looking out of the window, laying in my bunk. It was made out of pipes, the bunk. It wasn't the kind of bunk you see in the, you know, in the Pullmans. It was just a GI bunk and sweat. And I kept reading that thing over and over again, the patent number of the car. Yeah, you know, the patent number of the car. And then I drift off again. And then finally, at long last, we got to where we were going. And the doors opened, and it was like a miracle cure. I don't know what I had. I got out of the train, and I felt like 50 pounds lighter. My uniform was falling off of me. The temperature is 80 degrees. And I look back and I see this great big line, this big line of letters that over the top of the train. It said Seaboard Coastline in gold leaf. Seaboard Coastline. And I always remember the car. So I've had a little experience with that railroad. And every time I see the name Seaboard Coastline, I have that emotional thing. I can feel my throat tightening up a little. The fear I'm going to be redlined.